Hey, listeners, I have another great episode for you. Just a heads up, this episode does have some content your children may not have heard before, so you may want to give it a listen before you share it with them. Thanks for listening. Welcome. This is the Whole Home Podcast. So glad you pressed play today. I'm Laura Letterio. I started this podcast a year ago, and my job for the podcast is to be asker of questions. Today, I'm going to ask a whole lot of questions of the one and only Sarah Catherine Elliott. Welcome, Sarah Catherine.
Thank you.
I'm truly honored to have you here today. And now, Sarah Catherine, this podcast is not just about listening to ladies that we know, but it is also about giving attention and an ear to ladies we don't know or don't know very well that are, in fact, our sisters. And I would say that I would put myself in this boat this morning because I don't really know you, but I met you in November of last year and immediately wanted to know you more, but it isn't always easy to do that. And God has allowed our paths to cross a few times since then, and I am so grateful. And do you want to share how we met?
Sure.
Okay, great.
You were hosting a Friendsgiving for, I think, mostly homeschooled kids, which my child was not, but he was at home. and I saw, I think it was on the Smart Homemaking Facebook page that you had posted, would anyone like to come? And Eleni Meister and I were going to go together. And then last minute, Reed had a dentist appointment. And I was really nervous and was, you know, I almost didn't come. But I'm glad that I did. I got to meet you and I got to meet some other really wonderful ladies also.
Yeah, that was awesome. I thought you did come knowing someone. I actually didn't know that you didn't know anyone. You were so brave. And I guess I don't expect people to be as bold as you were, just step out. But I'm glad you did because now I know you.
Yes.
And we're friends.
I'm glad I did too.
So my memory and impressions of you have been that you are a lady of longing, longing to know God and longing to be used by him. And you impress me, Sarah Catherine, with your humble, earnest desire for God. And that posture reminds me of the posture I desire to have before Jesus. I have observed you time and time again serving the church in the short months of knowing you. And your service starts with those most closely entrusted to you and flows out to bless the church at large, starting with considering your son and how you care for him by bringing him to the park, like you just said, to get to know other kids, to making fun holiday decorations for your home that he specifically would enjoy, out to your community group by planning a baby shower, which was a mega blessing to everyone who came, and further expanding out by cleaning the church building week after week faithfully. And Sarah Catherine, I am delighted to call you my sister, and even more delighted to get to know you today. Thank you for your openness and willingness to be here. So, how did you react to me asking you to come on the podcast?
I was really surprised, honestly.
Okay.
You know, I told you that I had listened to a few. Jamie Hall had actually told me about it. So I listened to hers and a couple others. And I just didn't feel like that this was a place that I belonged, you know? So I thought, you know, I was really surprised. And I wondered, too, like, I bet Laura was really surprised. And I was scared, honestly. This is really out of my comfort zone. I feel like I did get a chance to talk to Jamie Hall a little bit about it when I was kind of considering. And I said, you know, I do want to tell my story. Sometimes I overshare.
Okay.
One-on-one, I would, you know, tell anyone anything. But the idea of, like, speaking to a group, I feel like I do better in, like, a behind-the-scenes role, like, not out in the open. And she just encouraged me that this was going to feel like a one-on-one conversation. And that, you know, she thought, she said she had actually already thought about my story and what God had done for me as being shared here. So, you know, I'm really thankful for her and for you. And I just prayed about it and I feel like God changed my heart on it.
Wow. Thank you, Jamie, for your encouragement. And yeah, she was in your shoes not too long ago, if you haven't listened to it yet. Find Jamie's episode. But all right, well, I guess we'll just jump in if you want to and just start with your childhood and where you grew up.
So I grew up mostly in Blacksburg, Virginia. I grew up in a Christian household. We went to a church called Blacksburg Christian Fellowship. It was non-denominational. And I went on mission trips with my church and my parents were on Young Life Committee, and we had Wildlife, which is like the middle school Young Life in my home.
I want to get back to that later.
It's interesting. And yeah, I considered myself a follower of Jesus.
Okay.
I think I had parents who really mirrored that well for me, and I could see a difference in my family and other families. Certainly, I went to public school, so other friends' families and what they did. And while I thought my parents are super strict and I do not like this, it's kind of embarrassing, I was also like thankful. Certainly, I didn't want to trade families. I don't know. I just knew, I knew my family had a lot of rules, but I felt thankful for them. I was kind of a goody-goody.
Mm-hmm.
I had an older brother who felt totally different about it, and he was very rebellious and hated it. But, you know, one way that I was teased was called, like, Sister Sarah Catherine. Like, they said I was going to be a nun when I grew up, and I liked it at first, and then I realized that was not a compliment, and kind of some feelings inside shifted for me about, especially as I watched my brother rebel and what he, you know, kind of what he was saying was out there that was better.
Yeah, that's a lot. So actually, I don't, where is Blacksburg?
It's where Virginia Tech is. And okay, without Virginia Tech, it is nothing. Okay. I mean, it is a college town all the way.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, does your family have connections to that school? Or?
So my dad and mom both actually were financial advisors. And they had Virginia Tech, I guess, was their territory. So my dad did like retirement plans for all of the Virginia Tech employees is why we were there.
Okay. So did they on purpose, or did they have the same job and then met each other?
No. My mom was a social worker actually when I was really young. Okay. And then she ended up kind of just becoming my dad's secretary and then actually got licensed herself and they were able to work together.
Do you have memories of her doing social work?
Not really. I mean, we lived in South Carolina then, which is where I was born. And I remember some things about South Carolina, but not about my mom's job.
Okay. And so what pulled them to Blacksburg?
So my dad actually grew up in Miami. And before he was going to be a financial advisor, his major was horticulture and agriculture in college. He had gone to Virginia Tech, but he wanted to go back to Miami and open a plant nursery.
Oh, wow.
And he was teaching high school ag and agriculture. And just wasn't working out for them. My mom was staying behind in South Carolina trying to sell her house, which was not good for a marriage. We were living with my grandparents. And my grandmother really was like meddling in their marriage and that sort of thing. I mean, she never really liked my mom. She was never very good to my mom. And so ultimately, when the house didn't sell, my dad just kind of picked us up and moved us to Virginia and started new. And he ended up getting a job, Edward D. Jones, I think, actually, at first doing like insurance and then turned into financial advising. And it just ended up being something he was good at. And back then, you didn't have to have a financial, you know, degree to do it. So he got licensed and he did that until he retired.
Wow. So you have no family here?
Just my parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how does agriculture play into his life, or did it play into your life growing up somehow?
Yes. We always had a garden and a compost, and I was a reluctant helper. I mean, it was definitely a chore, picking beans and that sort of thing. You know, we always like froze our own vegetables. And my mom actually told me a funny story when they were dating. He had had his own vegetables frozen, and my mom grew up very differently. Her dad was like a college professor. They were more wealthy. They had live-in help.
Okay.
And so my mom didn't really know anything about cooking.
Oh,
and
wow.
He went upstairs to change and asked her when the water was boiling to go ahead and put the beans in. And she said she was used to these bird's eye bags where you would put the whole thing in.
Yeah.
So she put the whole thing
in. Oh, my goodness.
And the plastic melted everywhere and caught fire. And... But, yeah, so.
That's a funny story.
I did not really like helping in the garden. I didn't have a green thumb or a love of plants. But my dad, he had like this 30-something-year-old palm tree that I gave my husband a couple years before I got married. And it really like ignited something in my husband for plants. And he became really into tropical plants and started collecting them at our home. And I still didn't like them. When he would give me plants as gifts, I would be so annoyed, like, ugh, something else to care for.
Yep.
But God really changed that in me. Like, when he changed everything, just gave me an appreciation for life in general. And actually now I do like to garden quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. How is that palm tree today?
Thriving.
Wow. Yeah,
I'll have you over to my house anyway, but definitely I'll show you the palm tree. It's a lady palm. It's in our sunroom right now.
That's amazing. I would never think, go get a palm tree, but I'm excited to see yours. It's a vibe.
Yeah.
Okay. Blacksburg, you said there's nothing really there. I have never been there. So is it just literally everywhere you turn college students?
Yes. It has grown some, like when we've gone back a few times to see some of my husband's family, I can tell that it's grown. But when I was growing up there, like you had to leave the town to buy socks even. There was nothing there.
Okay.
But now they have like a Starbucks and a few more things.
Is that in something in your memory where you literally had to go leave to get socks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's funny. Okay. So do you ever go back?
Yes. Not very often. Honestly, the last time I went, we took our son, I think when he was a year and a half, and we went for Thanksgiving to be with some of my husband's family, and it just gives me the yucks. Like, I made a lot of bad choices there. My husband and I did that together. And going back there just reminds me of all of that. And I just feel this like desire to hold my son close and protect him from, you know, these bad choices I made decades prior.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you don't mind talking about your personality as a little girl, how would your family have described you?
So that's interesting because I remember being kind of like painfully shy, shrinking violet, that sort of thing. But my mom says that wasn't always the case, that that didn't happen for me maybe till like late elementary school.
Okay.
And that I was always kind of more bubbly, outgoing as a young child. But I mean, I don't really have that memory. I have memories of insecurity.
Yeah. So there was just two kids?
Yes.
Okay. And you were younger by how much?
3 years.
Okay. So did you feel like you were your brother's tag-along, or were you the independent woman?
Definitely not the independent woman. I really wanted my brother to love me, and maybe like fifth or sixth grade is when we started becoming close. But before that, I definitely was just like begging for him to include me, and he was keeping me at a distance.
Yeah. What were the things that he was doing that you're like, I want to get in on that?
Just anything. Like, he had friends in the neighborhood. They would play like mainly games that they made up. I remember one was called Run Your Butt Off. and I just wanted them to want me to play, you know, and they did not.
Yeah. Okay, so your memory was the total opposite. Like, you still, looking back, would say you were shy and did you not have friends? Or
I did have friends. I usually would have like one or two friends at a time. That, you know, we were close and we kind of did everything together. But I don't really remember at all being very outgoing, or I remember thinking my brother was really, he had so many friends. He was friends with all different types of groups of people. He was so confident. And I remember seeing myself as a very stark contrast to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of things did you do with your girlfriends?
So I remember we would do like outside pretend stuff, I guess, a lot, you know, like you're in the woods cooking with dirt. I had one friend in particular, her name was Lauren. We were really into our planners.
Oh, that's funny.
And we would get calendars. My dad would get them for work for free to hand out to his clients, and he would give them to us, and we'd like, you know, put our stickers in there and organize our very unbusy lives.
Would you make up fake activities?
No, we would put real things in there, but it was, you know, like upcoming summer camps or that sort of thing.
Fashion show on Friday. Yeah. I don't know. Did you ever do that? Did you ever put on everything you had? And
not fashion show, but we would do like makeovers.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yes.
You know, I remember like really liking face washes and stuff. And I remember my grandfather saying, like, your skin's either going to be really good or it's going to fall off.
So everyone knew that you loved makeover. That's funny. Oh, man. Did you have a caboodle?
I definitely had a few caboodles. And I love taking them to summer camp.
Okay. What was your style then?
I don't think I really had a style. When I look back at pictures of me during that time, like, I have one that stands out in my memory where I had my brothers like hand me down Miami Hurricane starter jacket.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes like some, you know, Adidas shorts and, you know, a baggy t-shirt, and other times just jeans and those like cap sleeve shirts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I was a little bit all over the place. Yep. I didn't really have a style of my own.
So tell me about school.
I liked school a lot. I really liked English, creative writing, that sort of thing. I think I, you know, maybe the idea of going to school, there was some nervousness there, like being in, kids can be mean, but actually the classroom education part, I liked school a lot.
Do you have any like strong memories of a particular class or playground or anything?
Not really. My second grade teacher, her name was Mrs. Smith, still my favorite teacher of all time. She really helped me with my creative writing, and I got like a little after school creative writing mentor during that time, and I would ride my bike to her house. But, you know, I was in second grade. What I was writing was not amazing. But just that she saw that in me and wanted to nurture and I loved her.
Yeah. I mean, my husband has a really remarkable story of his kindergarten teacher just identifying him as a teacher, as a kindergartner.
That's amazing.
And when he moved up into first grade, she asked him back into teach the kindergartner class about art, of all things.
What a great teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine.
Amazing foresight.
Yeah, we can see things about one another. Or I'm sure you could even start to see things in your son. And so, of course, I have to ask, do you dabble in writing now?
Not that much. You know, it's something that I'd like to get back to. So it's been like November a year ago where I feel like I really started seeking God again. And I did start journaling during that time. But even since then, it's kind of fallen off. So it is something that I'd like to get back to doing, but just haven't. I don't even know where to start.
I get that. Very much so. All right. Well, just what other things were you into? Did you do like little clubs growing up or sports or dance or anything like that?
I wasn't really good at much, but I tried everything. I did like volleyball for a year, soccer for a year, softball, dance. And I remember a couple memories, my mom telling me like for soccer, I would basically just stand in the middle of the field and just look up at the sky. And they would be on the sidelines like, together, go, go. And I didn't hear them. And then for dance, I did do that a few years. My mom was actually a really good dancer.
Okay.
And so I did tap, ballet, and jazz for quite a bit. And I don't think I knew like how not good I was. But I told my mom at one point, like, I just don't want to do it anymore. And she, you know, went and told the teacher and pulled me out. And when she came home, I asked her, like, Mom, what did Miss Leanne say? Was she disappointed? Mm-hmm. And she was like, nope, she wishes you best of luck. So I had a hard time kind of finding, like, as far as physical activities, like, you know, what, if anything, was for me.
Yeah. So was your mom the one driving you around to all these things? Or
yes, mainly. I mean, I think my parents did a pretty good job splitting because they were both working. But I would say my mom was definitely the dominant. And certainly as we got older, my parents moved to Richmond after my freshman year of high school because my dad was promoted. And my mom was no longer allowed to work for the company because it would put her under my dad and they didn't want to have these nepotism, you know. Mm-hmm. So she ended up retiring early. And then definitely she was the dominant, you know, one at home and taking me to... mainly just youth group at that time.
Who were you closest to growing up in your family? You said you didn't really have family around. Did you guys make trips to visit people? Or
yes, I had, you know, cousins my age. And normally, like for certain holidays, we would go and be with them. I had a cousin my age on my mom's side and also on my dad's side. And I was close to both of them, really.
Do you still stay connected?
No. I mean, I have spoken to them here and there over the years. One really went way off course, and she just wasn't a good person to have in your life. And the other one, I guess just different hurts that happen along the way kind of drift. You drift apart. But yeah, it'd be fun to reconnect with them now. One has a son, and the other has many children. I'm not sure how many. So now that we have our own kids, it would be neat to see each other again.
Yeah. Did your family ever take vacations just not to visit family, but to do other fun stuff?
Yes, we would normally go to the beach. And then as we got older, my dad would like win these trips with his job. So like nice. In high school, we got to go to Spain and he let my brother and I each take a friend.
Wow.
So we did get, you know, the older we got, the more vacations happened, I would say.
What is a memory from that? I bet it was so beautiful.
It was so beautiful. I remember the different castles. I remember a lot of calamari.
Oh.
And a lot of jamón de serrano. There was no places open during lunchtime. And so every day for 2 weeks, we had crusty bread and this salt cured ham. And my dad was like, isn't this great? And the rest of us were like, oh, not again.
Yeah. Do you want to travel more? Did that, like, I don't know, make you interested in seeing more places?
Yes, I would definitely like to travel more. My husband doesn't love the idea of flying. He has flown a few times. I had an opportunity to go to South America for my job right before 2020, and he did get his passport. We were going to go together, and then everything shut down. So it'd be fun to revisit that again and see if he would be willing to fly somewhere out of the country.
Yeah. Well, do you mind talking a little bit more about your memories of your church family? Is that the church you went to your entire life, the Blacksburg
mostly church? So it's really interesting. I know their dynamic has since changed because I've kind of, you know, looked into it, but we didn't have any like paid staff. We had five elders of the church who took turns preaching, and they all had other jobs. One was a dentist, one was a doctor, and the other three were college professors.
Interesting.
They didn't really have a youth group per se, but they had like, you know, we would all get together and go on these missions trips during the summer. We had Miss Kingston's Sunday school class. We watched a lot of Pilgrim's Progress. And
Wait, what do you mean you watched it?
There's like a little cartoon video, I guess, that she would put on. And also she had like Mrs. Kingston's store where we would get points for reading the Bible and then we could buy, you know, different things.
That's
and
a good
those,
teacher.
Yeah, those two things really stand out for me. When I was in college, I worked as a pharmacy technician, and I remember Mrs. Kingston coming in. She's passed away now, so I don't feel bad saying this, but to pick up her anxiety medicine, and that really messed with me. Mm. I couldn't understand why she would need anxiety medicine, or really, just in general, it had me started thinking, like, why, what is happening with the church and mental health, or what is, you know, and I remember asking my mom about it, and, but those are really my main memories of her.
Because your brother was older, was he in the same class as you, or would he have been kind of separate from you?
He was separate. And, you know, it'd be interesting to ask him and my mom now. He also, God's picked him up and cleaned him off in the past year. And he's had a totally different life change. But he, I don't really remember him going to church very much during that time. And I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if my parents stopped forcing him to go or if I just don't remember it because we weren't in the same.
Sure. How far back does faith go in your family?
On my dad's side, not very far. He actually, when he was a kid, told his parents he didn't want to go to church anymore. And he said they were fine with it because they didn't really want to go either.
Okay.
And then he was in Hawaii, actually, early on in college over a summer. And he was having an affair with this girl who was about to get married there. And they were sitting on the beach, and this guy was going out, handing out tracts. And he looked at my dad and skipped over him.
Okay.
And my dad was offended, so he got up and chased him down the beach and said, why didn't you give one to me? And then he read it, and he said he had a heart change, which I know is very unusual with a tract.
Yeah.
But changed his whole life, and he went back and tried to share with his brothers, and he got involved at Campus Crusades at Virginia Tech, and here we are. But my mom did have, my mom was adopted, but both of her parents had a strong faith and she grew up in the church. And as far as I know, she never had a period of rebellion or wilderness time.
Is your mom from the States or was she from another country?
She's from the States. She grew up in Danville, Virginia, actually.
Okay. Did her parents adopt just her or more?
Her and a younger brother. And then they had one child of their own who was their firstborn.
Okay. You said you liked going to church.
I liked it. I had, so I guess when I was a freshman in high school in Blacksburg was the first time I really kind of didn't really go anymore. My brother had started including me in some of the things that he did. He, for example, first just included me because he didn't want to get in trouble. So I remember, like, for example, he would come wake me up at midnight, and he would have me get on his back, and he would walk downstairs, and then he would turn on the water and have me wait and fill up a glass while he went outside. And my parents had this Mazda that was a stick shift, okay. And he could, like, pop the clutch and push and get it going. And then once I saw him drove away, I'd turn off the water and walk back upstairs. So it sounded like just one kid going down to get a glass of water and one kid going back up. So it started that way. And then he started, like, having me come with him, and we'd sneak out the window, and he would have parties at our house while my parents were out of town. And I had, like, something happen where I was cornered in a room with a guy who was older who wasn't even in high school and shouldn't have been there. And luckily nothing happened, but I became really aware of how dangerous it was. Mm-hmm. And I told someone, not my parents, because I didn't want my brother to be in trouble for the party, but I told someone about it. And they were just kind of like, okay, so what do you want me to do about it?
Sure.
And then I remember kind of a shift in thinking about my value and these insecurity feelings that I already had, like, kind of snowballing in that way. And then my parents moved to Richmond shortly after that, and I was invited to go to youth group at this church called Crestwood Presbyterian, which was no longer a church. My parents did not like the church, but they went for the next 3 years so that I could be in the youth group. Okay. And I was joined this thing called Just Wait, which was an abstinence group where we went around to different public high schools and we would do these Saturday Night Live skits. Okay. Abstinence. And I remember Monica Craddock was the woman who led it. She's also passed away now, but she would do this activity where she would glue two construction paper hearts together. Okay. And then she would, like, tear them apart to show, you know, these. And it's crazy that they would, you know, what happens, I guess, when you have sex and then split apart outside of God's context. But mm-hmm. It's crazy that they would even let us in the public schools, yeah. Like, in hindsight.
I'm amazed.
Shows how old I am.
Wow. So is that something you volunteered for? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. Like, yep, it was.
What was your part? Did you, said you acted?
Yes. I was in the skits. I had a few different ones. One where I was like this, you know, promiscuous girl trying to get this boy to come over to my house where my parents were out of town. That's one I remember the most because one of the other girl's parents was like, wow, you're really good at that. And I was like, that is offending me.
Yeah. Yeah. So you did that several years. So what made your family leave the church? Did you graduate or something?
I graduated, okay. And I actually went back to Blacksburg to go to college. And I think my parents couldn't wait to leave the church.
Okay. Where are they plugged in today in the city?
They go to Hope Church.
Okay. That is just so surprising that you would do that after all you shared. So what other things do you have that I don't know to ask you?
I don't know why I even just thought of that memory. I think maybe just thinking about that experience that happened to me when I was a freshman in high school, and then made me think about being in the abstinence club. But
okay,
it is surprising to me too.
I've got one. Did you have an experience when you were younger that you remember trusting Jesus?
Yes, I remember having, like, some pretty powerful, mainly on missions trips, actually, things where I felt like I really heard clearly from God, and I saw, you know, I saw some real life miracles. But I don't know, like, I don't have any memories of, with my own struggles, like, going to him directly like that. I mean, I did pray, but I don't know. It's hard for me. Pastor James actually said shortly after I came back to Richmond, I mean, to Remnant, Pastor Diddy did a sermon. And at the end, Pastor James came up and said, just so you know, faith is not believing in God. It's believing in his goodness. And that just, like, flipped a switch for me to be able to explain my whole life, because yeah. It wasn't like there was ever a time where I didn't believe in the existence of God. Even a time where I remember not praying or anything like that. That was throughout my life. But there was definitely, like, a 2-decade shift where I did not believe in God's goodness. I certainly didn't think he was the best thing out there. And I certainly wasn't going to him first. If anything, if I went to him at all, it was dead last.
Yeah, yeah. Did you grow up with, like, questions about God? Did you even talk about Jesus or faith with anyone in particular, or is it just something you sort of took in and you were proximate to?
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, I remember, like, kind of evangelizing others as a child.
Okay.
Definitely it was, like, a big deal in my house. You know, God was in everything we did. My parents' relationships and quiet times were very obvious to us. So I was 17 years old when I first met my husband, and I just loved him from the moment I saw him. And the guy that I told you about that, you know, kind of cornered me in ninth grade, that was like a intense memory for me. And when I told my husband about it, he had a totally different reaction to what the first person I told had. And in fact, he called him out later at a time in public, which I was just like, wow. I can't believe. And I just thought, this is the protection I've been looking for. Yeah. And I remember kind of doing like the opposite of the Lord's Prayer, where I was like, I don't know, God, if this is who you have for me, but make it him now. Like, you know, in heaven as it is on earth instead of. And that was a major shift. And I, you know, started really chasing him instead of God.
We'll get back to that in a little bit, but just paint a little bit more picture of just, I guess, your background. Did you have a job in high school, or did you, work at all?
So I wasn't really allowed to work, but after we moved to Richmond, I would have gone to James River High School, or my parents said I could go to St. Catharines. And I didn't want to go to an all-girls school, so I decided I was going to go to public school. And James River High School was like six times the size of Blacksburg High School. And I felt very overwhelmed, and I immediately regretted my decision. So I begged my mom to homeschool me, and we did end up homeschooling. I had to take a few classes at J. Sargent Reynolds. I'm sorry, I forgot the question.
Oh, I was asking you about working.
Oh, so because I was homeschooling, my dad said, okay, you can have a job. So I got a job at Subway. But it's interesting because his mindset had always been school is your job before that. So I'm not sure exactly what it was about homeschooling, maybe just for social that we weren't in like a cohort or anything, but that was like a short term period where he did allow me to have a job. And then as soon as I went to college, he did not want me to have a job again.
Okay. Wow. I'm amazed your mom just jumped right in.
Me too. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. That's awesome. And she didn't have any connection points. She just found what you needed and you went
yes
for it?
I mean, she did kind of ask around. I'm trying to think. She had there were friends who worked with my dad worked for a company called Valak, and they had friends, Tommy and Ann Robertson, who homeschooled. Their kids were actually in a cohort that later became Veritas School, and I would babysit for them some. So my mom had her as a point of reference, but they were way younger than I am, so they hadn't gotten to any high school stuff. But she had other homeschooling, you know, connections and could give my mom some ideas. But I think mainly just her own research. And I mean, it was definitely kind of trial and error.
How did it even pop in your mind that your mom would consider that, or your parents would?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe just self-centeredness, where I was like, I cannot go to this humongous school anymore. Please, what can I do to stay home?
So you're really self-motivated?
Yes. I think my mom just asked me this the other day. She's like, do you think that homeschooling was really good for you? Or do you think that you kind of got away with murder with it? And I think a little of both. I was really self-motivated, certainly for certain classes. I really liked the literature part because we could kind of pick our own, to a certain extent, reading things. But I do think because I wasn't really having much discussion, or there was no comparison within that, in some things like math or science, I would do the bare minimum.
How did you graduate? What did that look like?
A miracle. I mean, I think when I think back, it's just crazy. Again, maybe this is just a sign of my age, but my mom just made up my own transcript on Microsoft Word and sent it to Virginia Tech, and somehow I got in.
That's amazing.
I did have, of course, 1 year of high school, but like actually a transcript from Blacksburg High School. That was it. So I have no idea how that happened. I can't imagine that would happen today that way.
Yeah. I want to go back to that point, but I did say I wanted to ask you about Wild. All I can think of is Kratz. But Wild, what were you talking about earlier at the very beginning of your podcast? You did something wild.
Oh, in Blacksburg?
Yes.
Okay. So after my husband and I started dating.
Wildlife? Is that what you said?
Oh. Okay, yes, thank you. It was Young Life for middle schoolers, and we hosted it in our basement, but instead of Young Life, they called it Wildlife.
I've never heard of it. Is it still going?
You know, I don't know if it still is, but Eleni Meister told me that she was a Young Life leader. So when I told her that we had wildlife in my basement, she knew exactly.
Okay.
So maybe at least recently it was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Was it just like literally youth group in a basement of a house?
Yes.
You had a teacher?
So no real teachers. They were college students, and they would actually go around to the middle school and recruit kids. So most of the kids who were coming were not believers. And we would sing songs like... sang Cats in the Cradle a lot, Free Falling, Brown Eyed Girl. lots of strobe light dance parties.
What was the poll? Just come hang out? Or
yes, yeah. Just come hang out, snacks. And then at the very end, there would be, you know, the Jesus part. And then I think it was like a lot about like, look how fun Jesus can be.
Yeah.
You know, you go to wildlife camps. And it's actually really interesting to see a total shift in youth groups from the 90s to now, mm-hmm. with like a more serious tone, like, hey, we don't care about how many people are coming. We want to grow like solid believers. And I think that's great. I mean, but I didn't think about that then. Of course, then to me, I was like, yeah, look at these. Can you believe these people are coming to wildlife? You know, these,
yeah.
They're smoking outside behind the gym, but then they're coming to.
Yeah. So how much were your parents involved in that?
They were mainly just the host of that. They're really involved more in the Young Life, the high school, like being on the board, and then also kind of discipling the Young Life leaders a lot. And actually, even until long after they were off the board, like as recent as 8 to 10 years ago, they would have some of these Young Life leaders who are struggling in their marriage come to them for marriage counseling, and they would meet in our home. And so I think relationally, they were very involved, but mm-hmm. as far as like actually in the, they were not downstairs singing these songs with us or in the strobe light party.
What impression did that leave on you for hospitality or using your home? That's really interesting to me.
That actually is really interesting, and I never thought about it that way before, but my career ended up being very hospitality centered, and I really made most of my money imitating Jesus without giving Jesus credit. So that's interesting how, you know, only recently have I been interested in using my home for the church. So mm-hmm. that's an interesting point I hadn't thought about.
It sounds like they set a good example. All right, back to Blacksburg mm-hmm. and Virginia Tech. So at this point, you are dating your husband or you just liked him?
Dating him. I mean, dating, yeah. Our story is not the story that you want for your daughter. But... so I met him. He was known to be very promiscuous, and I was a virgin. And when I'm saying this prayer to God, and I'm, like, thinking in my mind, like, how am I going to get my parents on board for this? And I'm, like, planning out our whole future of marriage. Poor guy. I start thinking about these things, like Monica Craddock gluing the two construction hearts together and pulling them apart. My parents, like, mentoring people who are struggling in marriage and saying, like, well, that may not have been the person you're supposed to marry, but it's the right person now. And, you know, all these thoughts are going, and all of a sudden they're being used for bad. And I decide the way to win him over is I'm going to give him my virginity and we're going to be bonded for life.
Yeah.
And then God will accept it because we're going to reverse engineer this thing where then we're going to make it right by getting married afterwards.
How'd it go?
It was a really rough road.
Yeah.
So that was when I was 17. We got married when I was 33.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, tell us the story however you want to tell it. But if you don't mind weaving in some of your college experience just to paint a fuller picture of you.
I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I went to college. Growing up, I wanted to be a writer or an editor. But by the time I had gotten to college, I didn't really have motivation to be anything. And I thought, like, I just want to be a stay-at-home mom and a wife who hosts. Like, I thought maybe I'll marry a politician. Someone.
Yeah.
And
you thought about this.
And my dad was like, well, what makes you think that an educated man wants an uneducated woman to raise his children? So at the very least, you should be passionate about your education, even if you don't know how you're going to use it for your career. And I did not really take that to heart. I met my husband really the first month that I was at college, and my parents were very much against it. And so I pretty much stopped going to class, and I just first I moved him into my apartment, and then my mom didn't like that, so she moved herself into my apartment. Okay. And was like literally sleeping in the bed with me, which she's apologized to me for that many times since then, but I'm like, Mom, I don't know what I would have done in the situation. So then I moved out, and I moved in with him. Yeah. So there was not a lot of going to school.
Your parents were paying for college? It sounds like they were.
Yes, they were paying for college.
Was there like, you better figure this out?
No, I think they were really concerned for my life, honestly, at that time, like my physical life. We were using a lot of drugs, and they, you know, to see like such a dramatic shift in your daughter within like a 12-month period. I mean, I think they were scared for me.
Yeah. What do you think actually drew you to your husband? Because you seem very idealistic about him and willing to not see these dangerous things.
I think I didn't really have, I didn't really experience a liking of boys growing up. Like that was the first time I had experienced lust was when I saw my husband. And then also to see like the way that he treated me, like I was the most valuable possession, like even in silly ways. I remember when I met his nieces and they wanted to sit in my lap and play with my hair. And he was like, oh no, she don't touch her too much. You know, like he treated me like I was like this piece of fine china that was so breakable and delicate. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that I had really desired that. But he, you know, was, and that is ironic because he was living a very dangerous lifestyle. And I was going with him a lot of places. Mm-hmm. But I saw him as like the super protector that I had always wanted.
And he was going to school, and was he,
did he was graduate? Not going to school.
Okay.
He actually didn't even graduate high school.
Okay. Did you end up graduating?
No. I ended up later, in my mid-20s, I went to trade school to become a massage therapist, esthetician, and nail technician. And
that, you said nail technician?
Uh-huh.
Awesome. Let me see.
They stay short for massage, but I do at least paint them.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. When did you end up just sort of being honest with your parents, like, I'm not going to go through with school? And did you have to kind of break off your relationship with them?
No, actually, this was, again, disappointing, and it's kind of reminiscent of the same experience I had with my dance teacher. But my dad told my brother and I both, because we both were wasting his money going to school and not actually going to school, just partying. And he told us both, like, college isn't for everybody. Maybe there's something else out there for you. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, okay with it. I think my brother was a little offended by that, but not offended enough to get him to go back. But he actually has since recently in the past few years gone back, but I never have.
So how did you end up in the workforce and getting motivated to do anything at all? Did you have like a promise of marriage kind of lingering this whole time?
So my husband and I got in a lot of trouble actually, and he ended up going to jail for a few years. And again, my parents, like, compassion and kindness and grace to us is like unthinkable for me as a parent now. But I moved back home while he was there, and, you know, I knew I was going to have to find a way to make money and that he would be getting out, and I wanted him to move to Richmond and to be able to have an apartment and, you know, a different life set up. So I used that time to go to school, and I was working full time.
Okay. Do you still practice today?
I actually just quit this past June to be a stay-at-home mom.
Okay. Wow. Did you have your own setup, or were you working at an organization?
I worked for the Jefferson Hotel, and I was actually the spa manager there. It was a good job.
Did you get benefits?
Yes and no. So technically, I worked for Salon Vivace that rented a space within the Jefferson Hotel, so okay. We weren't direct employees, but they did still give us benefits. I actually almost never used my discount, though, because I didn't want to have to tell someone I worked there. I didn't want to have to ask for it. So yeah, yeah. I just didn't use it.
What would you share or consider a significant turning point in your life?
Having a child.
Okay.
I think, you know, certainly marriage. I think it was Pastor Doug was preaching recently about how marriage can point out our selfishness. That did not point it out to me. Mm-hmm. But after I had a child, I really was able to see what the Bible was talking about with like how our actions affect others, even maybe affect or definitely affect our future offspring that we never, you know, generations that we never even meet. I had a hard time, like I think most of America, understanding how Adam's sin could have any type of impact for me or anyone in this time period.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's one thing, like as I got older, the Bible just became a little, not silly, because like I said, I did believe in God, but just irrelevant, I guess, mm-hmm. which is maybe worse than thinking it was silly. And, you know, I did think my parents were great parents, even to us in adulthood. And I just kind of thought that's what good parents who love you do. And then when I had my own child and I was struggling to show grace and compassion to a toddler, I just realized, like, I do love my son so much. So what do they have that I don't have?
Yeah. Did you go to them and ask that question or?
No. At the same time, I had this group of friends. They had been work friends, but none of us worked at the same place anymore, but we kind of had this continued group chat. And it started out to like stay on top of work topics and beauty trends, that sort of thing. And then it had become really all about politics and religion. And there's a lot of church hurt on that. And somehow I was considered like the Christian voice, I guess because maybe I was the only one who actually believed in God's existence. They were asking like some tough questions and it got me reading in my Bible again. And I had also started to combat my struggle with motherhood. I'd started taking Adderall and I didn't tell anyone that I was. I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell my husband. And things got a lot worse for me. Like I was really struggling with emotional regulation. And then on top of that, I wasn't sleeping very much, which made the emotional regulation even worse.
Yeah.
And I would be staying up reading my Bible on Adderall. And God was really good to me anyway. And I literally started praying on my knees. Like I heard a voice say, get on your knees. And I did. And I was praying about my marriage and the struggle that we were having. And I feel like God said, like, okay, let's work on you first. And I want you to stop taking Adderall. And I said no, because I was worried I wouldn't want to read the Bible anymore if I stopped taking it. Yeah. You know, I thought that was like fueling my interest. And so it was about maybe 4 or 5 months later before I stopped. But during that time, like he was really good to me anyway. And he taught me a lot about himself. And when I finally was able to stop taking it, like, I mean, he had already started changing me even in my disobedience, which is like crazy, but then to see like after I was obedient all the changes that he made in me, it's just really remarkable. And I still feel like in disbelief about it, like sure. why didn't I listen so much sooner.
Where did you read in your Bible?
So I started back at the beginning and I'm still there. I really got into the first 5 books of the Bible, and the stories in them opened up to me in a way that I never saw before. Even the weird stories about Noah and his son coming in the tent. Like, all, yeah, they were asking me like some crazy questions of like stories that I didn't even remember. So I kind of went to work trying to figure out, are they shaking up my beliefs here? Like, why are these? And why would God put something so yuck like this in there?
And how did they know about it? Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So one of them, she had actually gone to seminary at The Rock. I don't know if you remember that church.
Yeah,
and she had married someone who was in there. He ended up like ODing on drugs. And then she had gotten pregnant by one of the pastor's sons. And there was all kinds of like sexual abuse against her there. Another one had gone to Liberty University and also said that she grew up a Christian, but now she's bisexual and doesn't believe in God. The first one, she said she rescued herself from God, the God of the Old Testament, who is the ultimate enemy. I mean, they were like,
you
some,
were in it.
Yeah. And then a third one, she was just really into New Age. She would like charge her water under the full moon. She had crystals under her bed. And she actually has come to Jesus since then. So yeah, he was not only working on me in that conversation.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible. That's incredible. And then it's even incredible where God met you, because I guess I expected you, if I was being honest, to say, oh, well, I started with the Gospels. And you totally didn't even say that at all. But yeah, God knew what you needed. I have a question. Where did you get your Bible? How did you even have one?
I still had one from when I was young. I had the, do you remember like Beth Moore and who was the other lady that was really popular when I was in high school? She did precept studies.
I'm not sure. The only thing coming to my head is Joyce Meyer, but I don't know.
It might have been Joyce Meyer.
Okay. I definitely did some, I've got a lot of Beth Moore books somewhere. Yeah.
So I had this like, I don't know if this is how I pronounce it, but this is how TJ Hall pronounces it. I like it. A NASBY.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I can hear his voice. Yep, yep.
And it had like all these extra like kind of commentaries and stuff with it. So that's
from those ladies.
Yeah, it was okay. From one of these precept studies that I had done. We actually also had a New Believer's Bible in my house that had been my husband's, which I think was the NIV. And then since then I've bought a new Bible because those were very outdated, which is interesting to say. But like the Bible I have now has updates from the Dead Sea Scrolls that these, you know, 1990 editions did not.
yeah. Super interesting. All right. So then what steps did you take after getting on your knees and praying?
So I actually, my dad showed me the Bible project and I listened literally to every podcast episode they've done. And then I also started taking some of their classroom, but I was doing them by myself.
Which are free.
Yeah, which are free. Yeah. I was doing them by myself. So I had questions. So I was like trying to get my parents to do some of them with me, but you know, they have their own things that they're doing. And while they were super interested in their daughter being interested in the Bible, they didn't really necessarily have time to do a whole classroom thing with me. So I had actually run into the Halls. I had known them previously from, I had gone to Remnant a little bit when I lived downtown for like a few months.
TJ and Jamie, right?
Yes, yeah. TJ and Jamie Hall back in 2012 or 2013, I guess. And I ran into them actually at Hardywood Brewery around Halloween, not 2023 but 2022, and I had asked, I said, oh my gosh, please come meet my son. And then I had asked them like if we could get together sometime because I really wanted to share with them, you know, I see how real God is, I want to tell, you know. But their experience with me for the previous decade had been like I wanted to hang out and binge drink, so they like had arm's distance. And I just really prayed about it. And then it was actually Easter Sunday 2023, I guess. I was driving around. I did not want to go back to Remnant, but I was driving around hoping to run into them outside of Remnant.
Okay. Yeah.
And just like listening to praise music. I did not run into them. But about 6 days later, my husband and I were at this restaurant. I forget what it's called. We had never been there before. It's down by the river. And we were getting ready to leave. And at least in my memory, it goes like this. Jamie and TJ Hall come running down like, Sarah Catherine!
Wow.
And we stayed and we sat with them and talked. And I told them about what had been going on. And
could you believe it?
No.
Like they found you.
I know.
They found you.
And TJ pulled my husband aside and said, like, you guys should come to Remnant tomorrow. And I told them that I was actually thinking about trying the, it's like a Mennonite sect across the street from me. It's called the West Richmond Brethren Church or something. Mm-hmm. That I was planning on going there the next Sunday. And TJ said, no. and we went to Remnant the next morning. And I've been going ever since.
Did you come, which camp, not campus, which building?
Midtown.
Midtown. Okay. Awesome. So you started coming when?
It was the week after Easter. So it was like... The Hebrew study had just started. I started right at the beginning of the Hebrew study.
Did you love that?
I did.
That's
good timing.
Perfect. Yeah. That is really awesome. Okay, so tell me, at this point, you just have like a longing and desire, but you don't really know what's going to happen, or you're like, okay, I'm changing now.
I knew that I was changing, that God had already changed me. So along with the Bible project on my own, I had also discovered this Bible scholar called Michael Heiser, who teaches some kind of scary things, like about, do you know who he is?
I just was listening to him yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. He has also passed away.
Yes. So that really shook me up and sent me like wanting to run for a church, because where I had previously thought, especially with my friend who was like into New Age stuff on there, like I had just kind of thought like being in massage, seeing all these people with their crystals and their like, you know, spirit journeys they go on and stuff. Oh, these people have really outsmarted themselves with.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. And these are really bad, demonic things that are out there.
Yeah.
And they're not just back in like ancient history. They right. are current in this present day. And I had a lot of questions about that that I wanted to ask. And TJ could answer some of them, but I also got a chance to talk to Pastor Josh about it and about Dr. Heiser specifically. And I said, I just want to know, like, is this a credible dude? Mm-hmm. And then I'll have more questions later. But and he assured me that while he didn't agree with everything that Dr. Heiser taught, that he was legitimate. And that was just really life-changing for me. I mean, I didn't really have anyone else. Like, my parents were not interested in getting into any of that.
Yeah.
In fact, they were scared for me that I was interested in wanting to find out. And they don't feel that way now. We've had lots of different conversations. But at that time, I was like, maybe a little scared for myself about what I was reading and learning and hearing. And I was desperate for someone to put me at ease with that. And mm-hmm. so Pastor Josh just being willing to answer as like just this random person who showed up. I'm not a member. That was like super impactful to me.
Yeah. Were you on a mission? Like, I'm gonna walk up to this guy. And
I emailed him. I had like filled up maybe a connect card and he had emailed me about had I joined a community group yet. And so I just went for it in the email. And
yeah.
I've actually gone back and read that email since. I sound like a crazy person. But but he did not make me feel like that. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. Okay, well, because we're going to, you know, fast forward in your next podcast episode into, I guess, where you're at now with the Lord. Let's just look back again for a second. If you want to go big picture on this, what are some things, I guess, you've learned as you're older now in your life?
It's definitely made me rethink how I'll teach my own child the Bible. And I don't mean that in any disrespect to my parents, because like I said, I mean, they are also the reason that I made a change mm-hmm. later. But I just didn't understand how the Old Testament had anything to do with me. And I want to make sure that my own son understands the Bible as a cohesive unit
mm-hmm.
And that it is very relevant to him. It's hard for me to say because I can't really, I think I had so many things wrong.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to say just one, one or even a couple lessons.
Sure.
That I've learned. There are so many things that I had wrong, not even just about the Bible, just about humanity and myself and who I was and who I was supposed to be. And I've learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, how about just looking back with these new eyes? Is there something you do appreciate about your past that maybe while you're going through it was really hard to see?
I mean, I can see how God was with me during it all, which I don't even really totally understand that. A lot of what I believe is that, you know, I did lose my salvation. I definitely think I was going to be dropped in that pit. I think I lost the Holy Spirit. So I don't even really totally understand myself, like how God was there with me through it, but I can see it and I'm thankful for that. I feel like he gave me like a whole new perspective on my life and the choices that I made that I did not have, there was no way I could have seen it that way without him. Just like a different perspective on the world in general. I was very antisocial and I thought like, you know, relationships were just a unique struggle for me. And now seeing like all that time wasted that actually who he calls us to be to other people, and I don't know, I guess maybe it's still a little painful to think back about like some of the choices that I made.
So how has Jesus changed your life?
Oh, really, in every way. I mean, there's still plenty of work to be done in me, but just like the heart that he's given me for other people and for service. And I was so selfish, and not that it's not something I don't still struggle with, but just seeing like my anxiety and insecurity really being summed up as selfishness, and how I was like the biggest problem in my own life, in my own marriage, and in motherhood. In almost every way outside too, I'm just nothing like the person that I was. I mean, I didn't even have any clothes that weren't black.
Right.
It's crazy how even the exterior yeah. of us, he changes.
And you're wearing sky blue right now. It's beautiful. Well, it's funny. Wow. That's a thought just flickered in my mind. I realized, well, I had to wake up really early. I knew everyone else would be sleeping this morning before you came. And I was like, what am I going to wear tomorrow? I need to know so I can just go grab it. And I was like, really want to wear black. And there's something in my head said no.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
And then look what I'm wearing. I'm wearing bright yellow. Bright yellow.
I love it. It's very cheery.
So no black for you. Just sunshine and blue skies all the way. Thank you, Jesus. All right. Awesome. Well, is there anything else you want to share, Sarah Catherine, before we close out this episode?
No, nothing that's coming to mind.
All right. Well, this is a time where you get to turn your attention on another woman in our remnant family and maybe just point her out for a way that she's touched your life with how she's shown Christ to you. And then after you share who she is, would you pray for her?
Yes. So I want to say this was actually way harder for me than I thought it would be.
Okay.
I started with a list of 9 women,
okay.
Which is like,
awesome.
I feel like a huge testament to Remnant because when I first came back there, I thought, I don't know if there's a place for me here. Like, I don't have a husband who's leading me to come here. And how am I going to break in and meet any friends? Like, I don't see like an obvious path for a women's Bible study, or I just don't know if there's a place for me. And I haven't even been coming a year. And so already that I had 9 women who...
That's amazing.
I mean, I'm just really thankful for how I've been treated and how people have brought me in. But I narrowed it down to 2. I know I'm cheating a little bit. So Jamie Hall for sure, because she's been showing me Jesus for a long time before I even came back to Remnant. And then the other is Eleni Meister, who really changed my life. Noah Kester put us together for... Remnant kids one morning in the 5 and 6 year old room. She got my number that day, and almost immediately we had a play date. She introduced me to other moms with kids Teddy's age, and I have like regular friends now who have children Teddy's age. I mean, she just really brought me into the fold, and I'm thankful for that. So I'd like to pray for them both, just the same prayer, really. Dear God, thank you for Jamie Hall and Eleni Meister. Thank you for the work that you're doing in them as moms and as wives and as sisters. And you, I pray that you just give them perseverance to continue spreading your love and to resist the love of self. And I pray that you just draw them near to you, Lord, and then just keep cleaning them up some more so that they can come even closer. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thank you for listening to the Whole Home Podcast, a podcast that displays the unity of sisters in a local church and the way God so wonderfully gives us to each other in our uniqueness and in our sameness for His glory. The stories we share weave together as one grand testimony to the work of Christ and His faithful presence in the garden of our lives. Remember, the Master Gardener is always at work, so let's yield to Him and grow where we're planted.